You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
That is a good thing, I think, with HippoTractor, in the sense that I'm allowed, of course, to give feedback to what Kiaran writes, his instrumentals. We all can say that we don't like something, but we never do because it's always perfect. He's amazing. So the good thing there is that I'm forced to write, lyrics and melodies for those riffs. I can't change the riffs because they're perfect. So that limitation is a good thing. There's this this expression, limitations breed creativity. I think it is. Sometimes you can just get lost if you have no limitations and you don't know where to start, right? So that's kind of something I really like, to have that balance. With Psychonaut, I write everything. With HippoTractor, it's just vocals, and I need to work with what I get.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians, talk all about their lives and music while sharing a craft beer. I hope you had a killer weekend. I most certainly did. I had such a blast this past Saturday at Yakima Chief Hops Presents Vox and Hops Haze Wars, which took place at Kanawha Brewing. Six breweries went head to head to create the best mono hop IPA featuring Yakima Chief's hops, experimental hop HBC 586. Killer haze from all six breweries. You can go on, head on over to Vox and Hops' social media to find out who is Vox and Hops' haze lord of 2023. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal are Montreal's premier metal promoter, and I'm very stoked to have them behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Now, on today's Artist Spotlight, I'm super stoked to be showcasing Omnifarium. Get ready, everyone. This is their killer track, Dehumanize.
Supremacy, elish, our best are off. We are no one at all. The
Damn, that was sweet. Omnifarium is a killer band that features Jose and Horta from Fit From An Autopsy. Dehumanize was taken from their album The Summoning, which dropped back in November of 2022. You should definitely go and check them out. I have put the link to their Bandcamp in the description of this podcast. Massive cheers to Omnifarium for being on today's Artist Spotlight. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I'd just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I would love for you to tell a friend about the podcast. There's someone in your life that just loves metal and craft beer. Well, you should let them know that the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast exists. You could tell them that there are over 400 episodes where I hang out with metal musicians. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing a craft beer. If you were to encourage one of your metalhead craft beer enthusiast friends to become a brand new Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, today's episode, I'm very stoked to be with Stefan DeGraff of Psychonaut and Hippotractor. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 406.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm very stoked to be with Stefan DeGraff of Psychonaut and Hippotractor. Stefan, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Very good. Very stoked. It's a Saturday afternoon for me. It's beautiful. It's starting to warm up a little bit, maybe, here in Montreal. I never trust it in March. You never know what's going to happen with the weather. I do know that I'm going to have a good time right now with you. That is something that is certain. Let's start with a very simple, simple question. How has 2023 been so far for you?
Really good, actually. Yeah, we've played, I think, good 10, 15 shows so far with both bands combined. So, yeah, they've all been really cool. It's really awesome to play these new songs for the first time and really put together a new set list with some of the old stuff, some of the new stuff, and yeah, just do whatever we want and can't complain. It's been great.
Fantastic. That's awesome. It's very cool to have two bands and to be able to bounce back and forth like that. A lot of people would like just do one section at a time, right? But you seem to be managing to balance both, which is difficult.
It can be, yeah, but so far it hasn't been a problem. Yeah. it's just so great to be yeah, to kind of have those two things because they're quite of a different experience for me. I'm just a singer in Hippotractor. I don't have to play guitar. So the experience is completely different. And yeah, I love it. And I love doing them at the same time as well. Yeah.
I think it's super interesting. We're going to dig into that later, but it's Vox and Hops. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends. We talk all about their lives and music while sharing a craft beer. So what beer do you have on your side today that we will be sharing virtually?
I have a local beer from my hometown, actually. It's called Mechelen. This is not the correct glass, but this is a Gouden Carolus Triple, and I have the bottle here.
Hell yes. Oh, I'm jealous. It's been a long time since Cryptopsy has been over in Europe, so I'm jonesing for some true Belgians.
Yeah, yeah. It's the best beer, you know. It's just this. So, yeah, I'm enjoying a Gouden Carolus right now.
Very cool. On my side, I am going to be enjoying something a little wackier than that. Something that would probably really upset the Belgian true purist beer people. This is from Pub Brewski. It's a very cool microbrewery here in Montreal. Okay. I love Derek. The brewer is a scientist. I love him to death. And I was hanging out with his new co-worker, an assistant brewer, Aurelier, yesterday, and he hooked me up with this. This is Citra Madness. It's an IPA that's just packed with Citra hops. Citra Cryo, Citra Spectrum, 7.5%. Pub Brewski. Love it, love it, love it. I'm going to crack this, and I would love to hear about your very first beer, Stefan.
Wow, my first beer. Fuck. must have been a really, really cheap and I assume warm beer in a plastic cup when I was 14 or 15 or so. So I think it was a Jupiler. It's one of the most famous beers in our country. Yeah, I assume it was that. Yeah, I didn't like it. It took me, let's say, the first 30 beers I drank, I didn't want to drink. I just wanted to be a part of the cool kids. And then I started to get it.
It's a beer is an acquired taste, much as extreme music is. You know, the first few times I listened to even my band before I was in the band, I was like, what is going on here? I don't understand anything. And I think that's what happens with beer. It's your palate needs to grow and develop. But a Jupiler is, you know, it's like a, how can we describe it? It's like a Budweiser from Belgium.
Yeah, but Budweiser is an attempted Jupiler.
the Czechs are all upset with you right now.
Yeah.
Cheers to you.
Cheers, man.
This is fruity as hell.
Nice. I like IPAs.
Mm, it's creamy. I like Citra hops. Really sort of like a dank cat pee taste to it is always how I describe it. Farty. It's really good. This is really very, very, very in a good way.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
It's very interesting and earthy. There's something unique about Pub Brewski's IPAs is that they tend to not taste like anybody else's. They seem to have like a signature profile to them. I don't know if it's the yeast that they use or what's going on there, but it's definitely interesting. So it took you 30 beers to actually enjoy beer. At what point did you start enjoying beer, and what was the motivation, and then how did you end up becoming acclimated towards beer?
I guess it was the whole music vibe. It was going to festivals with friends, and I was pretty late actually to the festival game as a visitor. I think I was 17 when I went to my first festivals, and I had friends that had been going for years and years.
Why would you have waited so much longer? Was it something that just wasn't interesting to you, or did you not have permission to go?
No, I had permission, but I think I had some really shy years when I was like 16 to, or let's say 15 to 17. Those weren't very happy times for me. I was just very insecure, you know, adolescent.
Yeah, and then at that time we think we're the only people that are, right? But
yeah. But then I just started going to festivals with friends. I had also started playing guitar, so music started to get this completely new meaning to me, and I started to feel it in a very different way. And yeah, it seemed to be a part of the ritual. I guess you drink beers, you wake up when the sun is out, and you're hungover, but you just drink again, I guess. And I just did that experience, and yeah, that's when I started to get it, I guess. Yeah,
it's amazing. It's coming a little bit more here in North America, the festival vibes. But you guys are definitely so lucky to have those experiences. There's only a few. There was one or two that was happening here in Montreal, but it's nothing like what you guys have in Europe. It's so, so special what Europe has, the amount of festivals that happen. You can basically be like a festival wanderer and go to a different festival every weekend, starting in June and then ending probably in, let's say, early September. It's just insane.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're all great. I've visited like at least 10 different ones, I think. And I usually go to the same ones. You know, I love Grass Pop and, you know, things like Dour Festival and all that. But every festival I've been to, I've had fun. Doesn't really matter if it wasn't my type of music or whatever the circumstances, mud everywhere or just blistering heat. I always had fun. Yeah, it's really one of the things I treasure about growing up and becoming an adult, I guess, going to those festivals.
So damn cool. So cool. So many amazing bands. And then like the culture and climate of the people that are attending these festivals are so like-minded, and the amount of lifelong friends that you can make.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's like a melting pot of just perfect, perfect humans that should be together. It's amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
And if it wasn't for festivals, I wouldn't have bought my first pair of Crocs. I hated Crocs when they came out because they're so stupid looking, right?
Yeah.
But then going on tour with Cryptopsy, we do these festival runs, and then I would ruin any pair of shoes that I had if you end up being booked on one of these festivals and it turns out to be one of those muddy ones and they haven't taken care of the situation. When you're walking around, your shoes are just scrapped. And here we are traveling in a van, and everyone takes off their shoes and leaves it in that little door alley full of mud. The used stage towels down. It does nothing. So before I went and did a run, I think it was in 2017, 2016, I bought a pair of Crocs. And I wore Crocs, and my shoes were not destroyed, and I've been wearing them since. So thank you, festivals and muddy festivals, for inspiring me to get into the world of Crocs. And if anyone works at Crocs is listening, let's do a Vox and Crocs collab. I think that'd be super sick. You become more acclimated to beer at festivals. At what point, you mentioned, as you saw this, that you do enjoy IPAs. Did you ever get into the craft beer enthusiasm? Is it something that's hit Belgium? Is it still very traditional?
You know, to be honest, I don't really think about if a beer is a craft beer or not. It's, I guess, most beer in Belgium would qualify as craft beer.
Because the term craft beer means that it depends on the amount of volume of beer that is made.
Okay.
I don't know what the exact, I guess I should know this, but I don't know what the exact amount of liters is, but that is what the terminology comes from.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just crazy. If you go to a bar in just a standard bar or cafe in Belgium, you get 10 or 20, 30 different beers to choose from, and you just start trying them, and most of them are really good. It's only very rarely that you order something that is just completely not your thing. Hmm. And it's really fun to discover them. And we had a bar here, I think, when I was studying in college. We had a bar that had like 600 different beers.
Wow.
It was this legendary bar.
I think I've heard of it. I think that people have tried to take me there. It's in, what's the big city in Belgium?
Brussels, maybe.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah, we actually had one like that here in Mechelen,
really?
In our hometown as well. Yeah, they're all over the country.
Oh, damn, you guys are spoiled.
Yeah, we are. And he had a basement full of them. So we would start trying them like alphabetically, but like in one night you couldn't get through the A.
No. It was impossible. That would always happen too. Whenever we play Belgium, and this episode's turned over to me. About Belgium the whole time. Cryptopsy Belgium stories. We typically play Belgium right before going to London. And I don't know why this is. It's just the way that the routing tends to have been in my history with Cryptopsy. And I remember one time specifically, we get our cases of beer and they were all 9%. Like, I think it was Dubel or La Chimay was one of them.
Yeah.
And Flo, my drummer, was like, don't get too drunk. We got to take the ferry and we got to go through the border. And you know, I know how you guys get. And then every single time we don't listen and we end up being a tad too inebriated. And the 24 packs of Les Chimay does not help us at all.
Oof, that's very heavy. Yeah.
But it's a good suffering. I'd love to hear about the soundtrack of your youth when you were growing up in your parents or guardians' house. What music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
My dad was a really big 70s fan, so we had Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and Deep Purple all the time. But he also really liked the prog side, so I think his favorite band to this day is Genesis.
Hell yes.
Pre Phil Collins, of course. And then, just all kinds of stuff that was not always my thing, but always real music with real musicians that were very capable. Like, it could be something like even ABBA, or it's just, I didn't always like it, but I could feel what he was feeling when he was listening to it. And that really rubbed off on me. And then when I started playing guitar, like I said, that's when I really started to get it. What was so interesting about the music, just how complex it was and how much thought went into it, how difficult it was to play those riffs and solos. Mostly 70s stuff. And then my first real love that of a band that I really was into was Linkin Park. That was when I was like 12, 13 years old.
I literally listened to Hybrid Theory this morning. I'm not joking. I'm on this like trip of nostalgia. I don't know why.
Yeah. It's timeless. Yeah, it is.
The hits.
Yeah.
That's cool. So it was always guitar first. Why the guitar first? Why the vocals after? Did you become a vocalist? I've spoke to a lot of people. So most of the time it tends to be you become a vocalist because you can't find anyone else. And they're like, oh, you suck the least. So you're going to be the singer. Is that the case? Or did you always want to sing, but you were too shy and guitar was an easier way to be artistic without actually being the front man?
No, it's definitely the first thing. Yeah, at one point, I was playing in a different band with Thomas, who also plays in Psychonauts, and Peter, the first drummer of Psychonauts.
That's amazing.
The three of us were in our first band, and then
cool.
We had a... Yeah, and we played like... It was a stoner rock blues band, you know, just very 70s inspired. And we had a fourth member for a while, a singer, a really good singer, actually. But after a while, he got really busy with his studies, and he couldn't show up to rehearsals all the time. So... Yeah, we got a little bored of rehearsing without a singer, and the mics were there. So you know, just for fun, Thomas and I, we started singing. And it wasn't really very serious at first, but after a while, we discovered that there were actually quite a few things we could sing. Most of the things we could not sing, but you know, there were a few things that we were like, okay, that's actually something new. And maybe that's something that your voice should do more often. And maybe we should sing together on some songs. And then gradually the singer left the band eventually, and we were left with the three of us, and we just decided to start fresh and then start singing with the two of us. So we became co-singers in that way in Psychonauts.
That's the birth story. That's interesting. Thankfully, that's good singer you mentioned continued his studies so that we got Psychonaut. That makes me very happy. Dropped Violet Consensus of Reality back in October 2022. Great record. Very, very, I love, and Pelagic sends any promo my way, I'm going to listen to it because I trust Pelagic's artistic integrity would be the best way to put it. So I was immediately hooked. Just so damn interesting. Killer guitar work, killer vocals.
Thank you, man.
The dual vocals, just awesome. Hippotractor dropped Meridium back in 2021. I had also listened to that because it's on Pelagic. Completely different vibe. You're only singing. Talk to me about the freedom of stepping away from the guitar and having this dual personality, almost artistic personality. It must be very freeing and interesting. I've had projects before, completely different than Cryptopsy. So I understand where this is coming from. So talk to me about your exploration of stepping away from the guitar and just being a sole vocalist, and the need to have two projects.
Sure. So it all started when the guys in Hippotractor, they were just a three-piece band. They were instrumental. And at one point, Kiaran asked me if I wanted to join. And I said, sure. I think it sounds really interesting, but I'm a bit worried that I might not have the time to practice as much as I need. And you know what? I think you guys really need a vocalist that only focuses on singing, because this is just a band that needs that person, I think. So what would you say if I were just singing and not playing guitar? And he liked the idea. Yeah, things just took off from that point. And I remember that it was fucking scary, the first live show.
I can imagine, because you're not hiding behind.
Exactly. Yeah. And even so, I mean, we have this stage setup where I'm kind of facing the crowd with my side. So I'm like in a profile. And I choose to face the crowd sometimes, but usually I'm not really looking at them. So that really helps me. But still, it's so scary, because if you have to play guitar and sing at the same time, I guess you always have an excuse, right? If you don't sing well, you can always say, yeah, dude, I know, but I have to play at the same time. You know, it's hard. Huh? And now I don't have that excuse.
No, so, it's all you.
I have one job, right? So it's scary, but I fell in love with it after like the fifth show, maybe. The first ones were really scary. But once I felt a bit more comfortable, you know, it's so fun to be so free to just move around and not worry about the guitar, not having to tune between songs, and talking to the crowd.
Cool. Technical aspects are not your concern. Right there.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a very, very freeing experience. Like you said, it's amazing. And that's what's so great about it. I mean, I would miss playing guitar so much if I didn't have Psychonaut. So it's a good thing that I have both of them. It's absolutely perfect.
It's like this dual personality thing. It's so interesting. How did you craft, and this is something that it's thought about, but then when you're actually on stage, it takes time to develop, but like a new stage persona, let's say. Is that something that you had to like actively work towards? Because you could have, but I don't think you have, basically have the same person be in both bands. But that's not good for the band. The bands need identity, right? So how did you go about creating two separate stage personas? And exactly, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think it started with the concept behind the album. It was a story about this person growing up all alone, without other humans that surrounded him, and basically like this, you know, let's say a caveman, who has to figure out what everything means himself and kind of gives his own meaning to life. So I'm really trying to emulate that person from the album when I'm on stage. And yeah, to me, he's, you know, he's a very smart and strong person, but also a very lonely and very angry person that is constantly just burdened with questions that he doesn't find the answer to, like, why is he there? Why is he alone? What's up with this whole world? And, you know, why can't I talk to anyone? And so it's basically me just trying to, live through him vicariously, I guess.
Was it interesting having started a band with Peter and then built Psychonaut to what it was? Here you are, you're stepping into Hippotractor, but he's not there. Was that weird?
Sure, yeah. It's, you know, the only person that I really knew in Hippotractor at first was the guitar player, Kiaran, because he's also the producer of Psychonaut.
Interesting.
One of my best friends for like 15 years. So we know each other really well. And the other two guys, I didn't really know that well. But yeah, it's always scary to go into a band with new people, right? You have to connect not only musically, but also just as friends. You need to be able to have fun together, right? Because otherwise, why would you do it? So it was definitely scary at first. Yeah. And I felt like the new guy. I felt like the singer, you know.
I'm still the new Cryptopsy singer. It's okay.
Yeah, it was a bit scary, but it's all good now. Yeah, I love them. They're all such great guys.
You mentioned your friend, the producer, always produces Psychonaut. When I was setting up for this, you guys dropped in 2021 a split with someone, but you produced it. Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Unless it's incorrectly listed on the internet.
No, it is. It's, I think if I remember correctly, the past three Psychonaut albums always had myself and Kiaran as co-producers. But I think maybe the order of the names changed there. That could be a thing.
Which is why you, I understand.
Yeah, we co-produce it, basically.
Very interesting. Is that something that is important for you to be that involved from A to Z?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with Hippotractor, it's different because Kieran writes most of the music. I just write the vocals and the lyrics and melodies and all that. But with Psychonaut, I'm the main songwriter. So in a way, it's kind of my album, you know. I want it to be exactly like I want it to be. And I don't want to give up that control. And sometimes that can be a bit stressful for the rest of the guys, I can imagine. But I need it, yeah.
We're very lucky we have Christian Donaldson in the band, and he produces us. So it's a pure trust. I know that he's going to do a great job. He's one of the best in the world, in my opinion. Writing for Psychonaut versus writing for Hippotractor, the freedom we were talking about a bit earlier really comes into play in this aspect as well, because you are not playing guitar. So when you're writing vocals, there's no limitations to, can I play this while I sing that? Is that something that comes a lot, or when you're writing Psychonaut, is it the riffs first? I guess I'm leaning into two questions here. So the when you're writing for Psychonaut, it's the riffs first and then the vocals come afterwards, but there's never any limitations like, oh, I would have wished I could have sang that, but I can't because I'm playing this.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. You know, usually I don't really think about, can I sing something and play it at the same time? And then that fucking sucks when I have to try it.
Some of the stuff is really intense. They're like on violate. It's just
yeah. And I'm kind of managing most of them. There's just one song that's really hard, but most of them are pretty okay. And I think I actually prefer to just write with complete freedom. And then if I really can't play it and sing it, then maybe I'll simplify the guitar parts a bit, something like that. But it would be a shame to not sing something that's the perfect melody just because I can't play it. You know, I just need to practice. I need to be able to do it.
You need to become superhuman. Yeah.
Yeah. But the limitations thing, that is a good thing, I think, with Hippotractor, in the sense that I'm allowed, of course, to give feedback to what Kiaran writes, his instrumentals. We all can say that we don't like something, but we never do because it's always perfect. He's amazing. So the good thing there is that I'm forced to write, lyrics and melodies for those riffs. I can't change the riffs because they're perfect. So that limitation is a good thing. There's this expression, limitations breed creativity. Mm-hmm. I think it is. Sometimes you can just get lost if you have no limitations.
That's true.
You don't know where to start, right?
That's true. Or when to end.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's kind of something I really like, to have that balance. With Psychonaut, I write everything. With Hippotractor, it's just vocals, and I need to work with what I get.
You're like given a canvas, and you get to fill in the colors, whereas yeah, exactly. In the other one, you're building a house, and you have to hang a canvas in it.
Exactly.
Very That's interesting. Nice, the title track of Psychonaut, killer track, killer Belgian supergroup. All the guests, Stephanie from Brutus, Colin from MNA, so damn cool. Just was it like a mentally chosen thing to make it like a Belgian powerhouse?
Not really. No, we just wrote the song. It was finished. It was good, but it wasn't great, you know. And we were thinking about ways to improve it. And we first had the idea, I think, to ask Colin to do the screams. And then we also got the idea to ask Stephanie to sing on the outro of the track, to have this really big choir going on. But then she surprised us by improvising something over the intro, something that we didn't ask for, but she did. And that completely changed everything, really made her mark on that track. Same with Colin. I mean, I could never do screams like that. It's so fucking brutal when he does them, and I'm doing them live, of course, but still it's just something that kind of happened organically. I guess the idea was there, and luckily we know them, and they're, you know, really nice people, and they helped us out. Yeah.
I'm huge fans of both of their bands.
Brutus's too.
Album was on my top 10 this year. Amun-Ra, whenever they drop something, is always on my top 10. Something special going on in Belgium. It's, you know, for a country that you can drive across in 3 hours, 4 hours, to have this many amazing bands happening. It's very cool.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. It's something that a lot of people tell us, people from different countries. They always ask us what the fuck is going on in Belgium. So, I don't know.
and Colin's just, his vocals are just so abrasive and manic is really the word that comes to my mind. Just amazing. I love it. And having guests like that that come in and do more than just fill the void of what you had expected them to do, that they make their mark, is what having guest vocals should be. It should be someone that comes in and puts their touch, their golden finger,
yeah,
into the sphere of the song to create something new, rather than just, this is my section.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's really cool. Really, really very cool. Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I just want to take a little moment about Cryptopsy's upcoming tours. That's right, I'm talking about the Scream of Perseverance tour and our headliner dates that coincide with that tour called As Summer Burns. The Scream of Perseverance tour is kicking off at the end of May and runs all the way until the end of June. We are supporting the mighty Death to All. We are going all over the United States, and we are hitting some of Canada. So excited to be honoring the legendary music of Death alongside amazing musicians that performed on these albums. Even more stoked to be doing some headliner dates in some cities that I've actually never played in. If you are planning to come to any of these shows, you should definitely grab your tickets by going to voxandhops.com/summer, and you will be able to grab all of your tickets there. That's voxandhops.com/summer. Do it, people. Come hang out with me. Enjoy life, metal, and craft beer in your hometown. Come to a show. We're going to have a great time. Now, enough about all of that. Let's get back to the episode.
Something very important for me to talk about is mental health. I think that the more that everyone hears what people do when they're not feeling well, the more it will make it be okay and be acceptable that humans are vulnerable, even tough, evil metalheads like us. So what do you do when you're not feeling well? What is your tactic to tackle the demons, to pull yourself out of the darkness if that's something that happens to you?
Wow, wasn't expecting that question. Yeah, I guess, you know, obviously music is always there when I need it. And that's the beautiful thing about it. It sometimes you don't really want to be happy, but that's okay. Like you said, you can just put on a song that kind of reflects how you are feeling, which kind of forces you to go even more down into it, but it, in a weird way, it becomes something beautiful. Like the misery becomes something productive or positive. I don't know. And yeah, so the first thing I always do is music. And aside from that, I love to do physical things. I love to just move and exercise and just make sure that I'm healthy and feeling good. Yeah, even though I can be very lazy sometimes too. But yeah, I would say those two things, just music and do something with your body. It can also be meditation or yoga. But something physical is always a good idea, I think.
It's true, because if you bask in the darkness, that's where trouble can come. But if you get up and you're moving and you're doing something good for yourself, even if it's a small thing such as going for a walk, at least there's like you've accomplished something, a small goal. That's something that I've heard from a lot of people, like you set these small goals. And if you set a goal and you achieve it, then you have something to feel good about. So if you're in a dark place, that could be one tactic. That is a good one. Another one, you mentioned putting on music that matches that dark feeling. So that's almost like basking in it and then just like marinating, but then having the musical aspect of it lift you up, because the music is something that saved you, that introduced you to fests, to drinking. It got you through your shy years. Talk to me about the shy years, and were you playing guitar during the shy years, or did that come what brought you out of the shy years?
Both, yeah. They're definitely what helped me become more social and, you know, gain a bit more confidence, because I found something that I was, you know, pretty good at the time. I couldn't play that well yet, but
That was better than everyone else, though.
I don't know. But yeah, it was a big confidence booster for me. Yeah, I was just, you know, I was kind of waiting until the sad feeling went away for a long time, just figuring it out, just thinking like, you know, this has to pass eventually, right? Even if I don't do anything. And I guess that's kind of what happened. But, you know, I still think it has to do with a lot of things. I was a really bad student, had a lot of trouble with authority, and was very rebellious as an adolescent, which is ironic because I'm a teacher myself now.
No
but,
way.
I am, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to be one of the good ones instead of one of the assholes, you know, probably something like that. But yeah, I mean, most of it is thanks to music, friends, absolutely. Meeting Peter, he's my best friend he's been my best friend for 15 years or so now. And he really helped me get a lot more confident and just also get the confidence to talk to girls, for instance, you know. Yeah, music and friends. That's what helped me.
There's an interesting thing that happens when a child basically loses their innocence, let's say. And then, because children are whimsical, right? I work in daycare, so I'm an early childhood educator. So there are days where we eat tortellini, and these kids, it's like Christmas morning. If they walk in from outside and they see that lunch tray and it's tortellini and they didn't know, the happiest, it's like from 0 to 150 on the happy scale. As we get older and as we lose our childish whimsical mind, our innocence, we could say, there's a time of darkness where we're searching for our purpose in life, right? And music is something that definitely touched me as well. So I'm glad that it touched you. And it's something that, you know, some people become more like, oh, I'm going to become a doctor. And then that's their path, right?
Exactly.
I think that's really something that happens. Like children lose their innocence and then there's these years of searching. What the fuck am I going to do with my life? Because Santa Claus doesn't exist, you know?
Yeah, that's, like you said, it's finding that passion, finding something that really gets you through. And it's one thing to get into music as a listener, which is, of course, also very therapeutic. But if you actually discover that you want to play music and that you have a little bit of talent for it, for me, that was just like a spark that immediately I realized I want to be a musician. One day I want to be a guitar player in a band, you know.
Was it something like you wanted to emulate other guitarists, or were you already writing? And that's like a big moment for people, like, I can make my own music. It's like amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, at first I just wanted to be Jimmy Page. That was that was the goal.
I think you surpassed that playing. You're okay now.
I wouldn't say that. But, you know, I just wanted to be a lead guitarist in a band with a really good singer and a really good bass player and drummer, which was the first lineup we had, I guess, you know, with Peter and Thomas and our fourth singer. Yeah, and then after a while, I remember that I got my first interface that I could plug into my computer and record myself with easily. And that's when everything really started for me, where I could record myself playing. And first, I just recorded covers to practice and to evaluate myself, you know. And then I started writing little doodles myself and, you know, gradually got better at those. And that's when the actual fun really started. to this day, I love playing on the stage, but my favorite part is the writing itself. It's the best feeling in the world to me. Even if you're not even writing something good and you're aware of it at the time, it's still so amazing. You just get lost in this puzzle, this infinite puzzle of possibilities and notes
so
that
many
you can
doors,
put together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's awesome. Teacher, I have to pick at this. What when you say a teacher, what do you teach? What do you do?
I teach French, English, and Dutch for ages 16 to 20, I guess. So the later stages of a secondary school here in Belgium.
In the school system.
Yeah. Yeah,
amazing.
The standard school system.
I love this. Okay, now I have to dig into this. Do any of your students know who you are? Are there any fans that have discovered that you're their teacher?
Not in that way. Some students have kind of gotten into our music because I told them I play in this band, you know. If you want to, you can listen to them. But never the other way around.
Okay.
No.
One day will happen. They'll be cool.
Who knows? Yeah, who knows?
I'm still waiting for a parent to come and realize that it's me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have had some parents.
Amazing.
That has happened. Yeah, yeah, that has happened.
That's so damn cool. And then another question is when you see someone that was like you were in high school, what do you do to, I imagine you're more understanding than your teachers probably were when you were a rebellious teen that didn't want to do well in school.
Yeah, I just didn't want to be there in the first place. I was made to be there, you know, like most kids don't really want to go to school, which is a shame because you should want to, I guess, but because it's super important. But if you're not feeling it, you're not feeling it. And my parents were brave enough to actually get me out of school for a few years. Yeah, it was a very courageous decision, I think, because it could have gotten wrong. It could have gone wrong completely.
So they took you to the system and then like homeschooled you?
Something like that. Yeah. And then I went, I had a job for like 4 days in a week and went to school for one day. It was this special type of education you could do, this very practical formation.
Where you're like learning a trade, basically.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then when I was 18, I went to get my degree and went off to college. And
at that point at college, had you tackled what you needed to tackle to enter the system again and accept the authority?
It was a long process, and I think I'm still kind of learning, because I had some wrong ideas about it. I guess I think I needed to grow up a bit more because I was kind of still rebellious in my teacher training days, you know. And
that's very funny that you chose to be a teacher though, despite the fact how much you hated school. It's like I'm gonna trap myself here for even longer.
Yeah, kind of.
Are you teaching in your high school that you went to?
Oh no,
because that would be even crazier.
That would be crazy. Yeah, no, it's I don't know. I had to learn what it actually means to be a good teacher. But you know, to answer your first question, it's exactly like you say. It's show empathy. Show them that it's actually quite normal to not want to sit down for 8 hours a day when you're 15 years old, just listening to some guy like, oh, do you need to know this? Why? Because it's on a test. You know, you need to know it because you need your degree to get a job, to blah, blah, blah. So you need someone that is heartfelt and that kind of doesn't take it too seriously either. You know what I mean? It's only school. But it's also really
it's
important.
Super important, but as you just mentioned, it's like you need to learn this because it's on a test. Why is it on a test? Because someone told me to put it on a test.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So don't forget that it's just one place where you learn. You learn everywhere, you know, and everything you learn outside of school is important too. So it's a balance between, and that's the thing, you know, the teachers I hated, they weren't doing anything wrong. I was just not in the right place. That was just not the way I wanted to learn. So that's where it went wrong, I guess.
Hopefully, as the years go on, I'm seeing it happen more and more. There's the school system should be more expanded to adapt to everyone's needs, and not every person learns in the same way. So, and I'm seeing more and more things happening, and I hope that it continues to go in that way, because we're all different and we all have the capacity to learn everything, but we don't all fit into the same mold. And that's what needs to be fixed. You put X amount of kids into a room with one person and expect everyone to be learn the same way. It's not going to work out very well. And the teachers suffer and they burn out really, 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 really quickly. I have many close friends of mine. Most teachers have a good 10 years where they're very excited and gung-ho, and then they burn out because the system does that to them. It's not the kids. It's definitely not the kids.
Yeah, it's the same thing here. It's 5 years here, actually. Yeah, most people quit after 5 years. And we have a huge deficit, let's say, just a lack of teachers. Yeah.
So I'm good for you for being there for the kids and teaching and tackling what you needed to tackle to get back into the system. And you're like hands-on changing the experience that you had. And I think that's fucking amazing.
Thanks, man.
Very, very cool. Something that I'm doing this year, something brand new, is I'm asking my guests something I'm calling Fight the Hops. It's a very small goal, something that you have been working on either the past few months or something you're hoping to work on, something that you would like to accomplish. It could be something physical. It could be something mental, become something career-wise. What are you doing right now to fight the hops? A very small obtainable goal that you hope to meet soon.
I guess the first goal I have is to write the first song for the next Psychonaut album. That's always the biggest victory if you have the first track that's finished, you know. Thinking of something else. I actually got into a new sport. I got into bouldering, which is a big hype.
What is that? I have no idea what that is.
It's just indoor climbing, you know, climbing on these plastic holes. Without a rope. It's just only 4 meters high. Yeah, just having a lot of fun doing that. It's just a new love, I guess, and just learning to get to know my body a bit more, I guess, and becoming stronger and more healthy, more in shape, I guess. That's something that's just done a lot for me mentally, and I feel so much better now.
Amazing. I like making beer collabs. I like making collabs in general. I do it for Cryptopsy. I do it for Vox and Hops all the time. I've released 60 to 80 collabs in the past 4 years. I have 30 new ones coming up this year. What would you do? A perfect collab. It doesn't have to be a beer. The perfect Psychonaut product where you would put your logo on and be proud of it.
Wow. I actually haven't thought about that. Perfect product. We're always worrying about new merch designs, but I guess that's too easy.
It's a very easy one, though.
Yeah. Well,
you could sell it as a merch design. I've made teas, I've made coffees.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People want us to do a nude calendar.
Oh.
That's a thing. Yeah. It's a joke that got out of hand here in Belgium.
Interesting. But,
one day I'd love to have a custom guitar.
Oh yeah.
To be honest, that would be amazing.
Is there a company, because you never know who listens to this, right? So is there a company out there that you would love to team up with?
I love Reverend Guitars. I already have an endorsement deal with them, and I love their guitars, man. Yeah. They're so great because they make these baritone guitars that I have to use because we tune very low. But they don't feel like baritones. They play very smoothly. The neck is like relatively short for a baritone. But my dream has always been to have a baritone Les Paul, a real Gibson baritone Les Paul. But I think they made one once, but it was like €10,000. But maybe something like that, like a Les Paul body and feel, but a baritone. Very if Reverend sick. Could do that.
Come on, Reverend.
Come on, do it.
Hook up Stefan. He's showcasing your stuff all over the place, including
exactly.
on Vox and Hops. Come on. I have to say massive cheers to Robin from Pelagic, the Ocean, for introducing us, making this happen. Talk to me about being on Pelagic, having two projects on Pelagic. How easy is it to just choose to be with Pelagic Records?
Yeah, it's still an honor for us to be a part of that. I remember when we were just talking about maybe reaching out to them for this re-release of our first album. That was the idea. We ran out of vinyls. We just pressed the album ourselves. And our merch guy, he recommended us to talk to Pelagic, and we didn't believe it was possible. We said, "You're fucking crazy, man. Just let it go." But he sent them a message anyway, and thanks to him, we got into contact with Robin. And that's how it all happens. And same with Hippotractor. That was super funny. So our manager from Psychonaut, I showed him the Hippotractor demos. And Pelagic doesn't really listen to demos that often, but I just asked him, you know, do you think this is good enough to send to Pelagic just to see if they're interested? And he replied like, holy, what the fuck is this, man? This already sounds like a really good album, because Kieran,
the producer,
records the demos. They sounded fucking great. Yeah. And we sent them to Robin, just like, hey, here's a new project by featuring Stefan from Psychonaut. Would you be up for a release? And like a few hours later, he sent us one sentence back that was like, this is fucking insane. Count me in.
Amazing.
And the deal was done.
And then goosebumps on your arm and like, tortellini day.
Absolutely.
In the camp of Hippotractor.
That's amazing. And yeah, I mean, they're an amazing label. I love every single band on there. I have never heard a band from Pelagic that I didn't like. They've gotten us so many shows, so many opportunities. Our reputation has gone up, like you said. If it's a Pelagic band, you're going to listen to them, because you know chances are it's going to be good.
It's the seal of approval.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're very, very happy to work with these great guys. Yeah.
And amazing. I love it. One last question. Classic Vox and Hops wrap-up question. Probably doesn't happen to you very often, but maybe it sort of did back when you were doing those fests, when you were discovering drinking. Every once in a while, happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
Okay. I eat a banana.
Ooh, like a potassium.
Yeah. I take a shower, and then I wait until I feel better, and then I eat something. But the banana is the magic weapon for me.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I sometimes eat it in the shower.
No. It's very,
just be like miserable. Just take my banana, go to the shower, that's and so just funny. Hold it out of the water.
That's so funny.
Oh, fuck, this sucks.
Showers do help. I don't know what it is. I think it's like you. We must drink more water than we think in a shower, right?
Yeah. We hydrate that way, I guess. Yeah.
I don't know if like breathing it in helps too.
Yeah.
Because it does seem to help. And not many people say that, because I asked this question.
Yeah.
It's true that it makes you feel a little bit better. Stefan, thank you so much for hanging out with me, talking about your life, talking about music, talking about craft beer. I had a blast. Everyone go check out Psychonaut, Hippotractor. You will not be disappointed. Two very different bands, but both fucking killer, and Stefan's just killing it. Massive cheers to you. This was great.
Thanks so much, man. Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, this was an awesome conversation. I am so damn stoked that Robin from The Ocean, Pelagic Records, Vox and Hops alumni, introduced me to Stefan. We had a killer conversation. I'm a huge fan of both of his bands. I love people that have multiple musical identities, and I absolutely adore digging into that when I have conversations with them. Also, was super surprised to find out that he is a teacher. I'm an early childhood educator, so whenever I find other people in the metal world that also has the dual identity of being an educator, I think that's super interesting, and I would love to dig further into that with Stefan one day in the future. Massive cheers to you, Stefan, for hanging out with me and talking about your life and music while sharing a craft beer. It is always a pleasure, and I can't wait to hang out with you again. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You could do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's VOXANDHOPS.com. When you do that, you shall receive one email a week that contains all of the details of everything that has happened recently in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. You will see which episodes I dropped recently. You will get to see which episodes I have coming up. You will also get to hear about any projects I have in the works before I announce them to the public, such as my massive global beer collab project, Pit Culture. You will get to find out which collabs are dropping next, and you'll also get to see which albums the Vox and Hops album review crew have reviewed recently, and you will get to see which albums Jerry Monk, Vox and Hops' metal architect, has added to the Brutal Awakenings playlist. There's always a lot of stuff going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, and I hate when you miss a single thing, so please do me a favor and sign up to the mailing list. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media and Evergreen Podcasts. I hope you have a killer rest of the week. I will be back on Friday with another episode with the Neurodivergent crew. This is a killer episode, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hello out there.
Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hayden, Backstreet's magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you.